8:40 a.m. Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Paul Gauguin Cruises.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. It's been more than 2 months since a House committee wrapped up its investigation into the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And now Republicans are launching their own version. They're pledging to review both sides and, quote, show what really happened on January 6th. Democrats call the effort obscene and political theater. Former President Trump thinks he's getting arrested on Tuesday, and he's reaching out to his supporters, urging them to protest. CBS's Christian Benavides on what this is all about.
A New York grand jury is weighing an indictment of the former president in a case examining a $130,000 payment made days before the 2016 election to former adult film star Stormy Daniels. Since January, several people close to the former president have met with Manhattan prosecutors. Trump has denied any wrongdoing.
All signs point to his imminent indictment.
Former Assistant U.S. Attorney Donya Perry says that will likely include having a mugshot taken, being processed, and an arraignment in front of a judge.
There has been no official notification from the DA's office about an arrest this week. An attorney for Trump told CBS News his comments are speculation. Senator Elizabeth Warren is calling for an independent investigation into the recent bank failures. She told Face the Nation one of the options on the table is to ask the FDIC to increase the insured amount for bank deposits. House Financial Services Committee Chairman Patrick McHenry responded on CBS as well.
What I will do legislatively and an oversight function is determine whether or not we need to address the FDIC deposit level. We did it after the last financial crisis, raising from 100,000 to 250,000.
Cornelius Hurley teaches financial services law at Boston University. He says these bank problems shouldn't be a surprise.
It's been a surprise to many people how suddenly the banking crisis in the U.S. leapt across the ocean and appears to have been a precipitating factor in Credit Suisse's immediate problems.
The Wall Street Journal, meanwhile, is reporting that UBS has offered to buy Credit Suisse for about $1 billion. So what will become of the arrest warrant issued for Russian President Putin from the International Criminal Court? Former CBS News Moscow Bureau Chief Beth Noble.
Neither Russia nor China nor the U.S. nor Ukraine has ever ratified the International Criminal Court's founding treaty, so they're not really part of its system, making it easy for Russia and China to just ignore the indictment against President Putin and focus on the matters at hand.
Putin was seen traveling in Crimea this weekend, which was illegally annexed back in 2014. He also visited Mariupol, which was seized by Russian troops in May. This is CBS News.
CBS News is brought to you by Paul Gauguin Cruises, artfully authentic, all-inclusive year-round cruising to Tahiti and the South Pacific. Visit PG Cruises.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation-related, and Brewing says it's badly needed, as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Don't you deserve a job you love? Civic Media is preserving hometown radio, broadcasting from main streets across Wisconsin, and we're hiring radio advertising sales professionals to join our rapidly growing network of local radio stations. If you have a connection to your community, prior sales experience, and want to earn an outstanding living where you and your hard work is appreciated, you should apply right now. Find more information on our website, civicmedia.us. Click on the Careers tab.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk, from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
And welcome to this, our second hour of our weekly Saturday morning review, our analysis, our discussion of those significant issues in stories in law and government, the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today I am at the Wisconsin Grassroots Network here at Wisconsin Heights High School in Mazomanie. If you have the chance, come on out. Advocates, leaders, teachers, instructors, community members talking about great numbers of issues important to our state, to our nation, to our local communities, rural communities, urban communities. A terrific opportunity also to chat with many people. Mike Crute of this radio station, Civic Media, also a major figure, speaking right now to some plenary sessions, also in some breakouts this afternoon, about the importance of communication in our state, the opportunities for all of us as reasonable people to talk across aisles and to engage in conversation. I'd like to think of the sort that we pursue on this very broadcast that is meaningful and informative and should, in fact, inform the ways in which we behave. So come on out. Be a part of the Wisconsin Grassroots Network here and enjoy and revel in this experience. Know as well that we are taking your calls from all listeners. We're going to get to a couple of those calls in just a minute. Right after I do a couple more instructional pieces on civics this morning, cannot resist. We talked right before the break about the crime fraud exception and about how an attorney for Donald Trump is now being compelled to testify in front of a federal grand jury in the District of Columbia to provide information about Mar-a-Lago and the documents there, the search there, other things related to that matter. A couple of the things related to civics coming up just in recent weeks. The former president has also asked a judge to find that he is basically completely, absolutely immune for any things that he said on the ellipse on January 6th, the kinds of things that he said during the course of the events right before the attack on our Capitol, the insurrection at that time, came forward and said, you know what, judge, I should be completely immune because I'm the president and I can say those things as a part of my First Amendment rights, but also as a part of my role as the chief executive. And the Department of Justice, again, has pushed back on that and said, of course, that that is not the case, that the president's comments there would otherwise be protected but for the fact that he precipitated the ensuing attack on the Capitol, right? The complaints that plausibly alleged that the former president's speech encouraged the imminent action that happened, the violence there, those complaints legitimate. They are real. Those people came forward and said, you know what, that's the reason why I went down to the Capitol, inciting an insurrection, kind of a variation on the crime fraud exception, if you will, but a different standard, a different application of it. If you engage in conduct, if you engage in activity, oral statements that incite violence, Your First Amendment rights are significantly restricted. And indeed, the Department of Justice taking the position that the president himself is not permitted, doesn't get absolute immunity for anything he says, especially in these circumstances when his comments, his conduct, prompt people to engage in things that attack our very nation. So that's one issue. No immunity for a president who engages in that kind of incendiary commentary, inciting people by his words, his deeds, to engage in that kind of criminal conduct. One other significant thing coming out of the civics annals just these past couple of weeks. We know it well, right? With the Republican takeover in the House of Representatives of the leadership of the House committees that are doing various investigations, some of them special committees, some of them continuing committees that are important to the work of the Congress generally, that Chairman Jim Jordan is pursuing an investigation of what he describes as a nefarious plot and federal officials to silence and punish conservatives in America. So he has brought forth this panel that is attempting to try to determine that not only the source, but also the purpose, the motive for allegedly this effort by federal officials to silence and punish conservatives. Of course, there's not a there. This is not a legitimate investigation. But along the way, as Jim Jordan has attempted to establish that federal officials have weaponized government against conservatives, again, completely unfounded factually, he has asked the Department of Justice and Merrick Garland for ongoing criminal investigative information. Tell me what you're investigating right now when it comes to the subject matter of our panel. Tell me about those otherwise secret and non-public investigations in the criminal arena that you are investigating and the U.S. attorneys are investigating that will be helpful to this panel in determining the extent of the weaponization. Of course, all of that said with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek. None of this real, but significantly, again, here's the civics lesson to Jim Jordan and to all of us, that ongoing criminal investigative activity, including grand jury investigations, yes, indeed, involving the former president himself, other people, are not released. It's a crime, in fact. For prosecutors and some other individuals related to the court to release that information. And so Merrick Garland this past week and in previous weeks has said to Jim Jordan, basically, I am not going to honor your request. Consistent with longstanding policy and practice, the Attorney General said, any oversight requests of this sort coming from this Jim Jordan weaponization panel must be weighed against the department's interests in protecting the integrity of its work, said the Attorney General, including as well the longstanding department policy that prevents us from confirming or denying the existence of any pending investigations in response to congressional requests or providing non-public information about our investigations. Sends that letter back to Jim Jordan saying, thank you for your request. It is not going to be honored, consistent with longstanding practice and procedure, which you know, Chairman Jordan, but nonetheless made the request anyway. Not going to happen. Never reveal, of course, from the Department of Justice or even a state entity, the existence, the conduct, the nature of an investigation. That is why, in part, even on this Saturday, as we talked in the first segments of our broadcast this morning, we don't know exactly what Alvin Bragg in the state system is doing with respect to an investigation. That does not get announced, that does not get revealed until, if ever, there is a criminal indictment, charges come forward. And that is the time at which the government speaks about what it has found. And so again, that civics lesson, no release of ongoing criminal investigative works, activities, again, a response to Jim Jordan telling him that that information is not going from the Department of Justice up to Capitol Hill. Let's break right now and take a couple of our callers. We've got people from right in this Madison area, delighted, as I said, to be here in Mazomini, just a few short miles from downtown Madison, a few short miles just from Middleton, where we're joined, where Ross is calling in from. Ross, we're delighted to have you with us this morning. Your comment or your question.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for your insight into the legal angle on the news and that we read every day.
Absolutely.
The question I have is a little bit more when it comes to things like where a state makes certain activities illegal, so in Wisconsin, abortion at this point is generally illegal except for certain exceptions, and marijuana is illegal. Right. But what it seems is what their people are being told is, well, just go to another state where it's legal, and then it's okay. And I'm wondering if legally, it doesn't seem like we've seen any prosecution, but I kind of wonder a scenario, two different scenarios. One in which, would it be legal for the police to hang out in Illinois, look for Wisconsin license plates at some marijuana dispensary, and then call back to some state trooper or some police and say, hey, these guys most likely have stuff. With an abortion, it might be a scenario in which, like, a woman is pregnant and is sort of known. She goes to another state to have an abortion because she needs it for whatever reason, and some nurse or some doctor sort of lets somebody know, like, hey, this woman's pregnant. And if they sort of follow up and sort of say, well, you're not pregnant anymore, you must have done something wrong. Does something have to be explicitly illegal, or is it generally okay for people to do those activities in other states and then just come back?
Sure, sure. It's a great question indeed. Many legislatures right now, Ross, are wrestling with that very issue. The most fundamental civics issue and comment that I would make is just this, that our state laws are predicated fundamentally upon geography, right? And so if I commit a crime here in the state of Wisconsin, where would I be prosecuted? Right here in the state of Wisconsin. If I go to Illinois and do something, I'll be prosecuted there, right? And so there's this fundamental notion that if you are going to be running afoul of the law, is the law of the geography, the state in which you are existing at the time, right? Your situation is one where you've got people, again, coming from a state where something is illegal, going to a place where it is legal. And so because of this fundamental notion that we don't generally prosecute, we wouldn't prosecute here in the state of Wisconsin crimes committed in Illinois and vice versa, because of that, your question is prompted. And because of the concern about, especially in the abortion area, I'm going to choose that one in particular, there are legislatures right now out there that are passing laws that are saying that if you are a resident, for example, of the state of Texas, and you go someplace, for example, to Illinois, and you are engaging there, for example, getting reproductive services that are illegal in Texas, but nonetheless are legal in Illinois, because of your residency, if you will, you're a resident of Texas, we can still extend the long arm of the law and identify you and prosecute you. Now, I'm of the belief, and I think this is why these kinds of laws are going to be challenged greatly in the courts when prosecutions are pursued here, that you can't do that. That, again, we've got this geographic notion that you commit a crime or not in the particular vicinity, the particular geography in which you find yourself. But that's not to say that legislatures aren't passing laws that extend that capacity of law enforcement to reach out beyond their jurisdiction, beyond their lines of their duty and responsibility, and try to find those defendants out there. That is a wildly incomplete answer, Ross, to your very good question. Aside from saying that it is very, very relevant to what's going on today as we, in the abortion area, marijuana, you indicated, obviously, another one. We have this patchwork now throughout our states. We've had it for a long period of time in many, many other areas, but we've got different laws. The most common notion, of course, that we prosecute for events happening in the state in which the activity itself occurs. Great question, great comment. We're going to talk more about abortion in our next segment. Also going to be taking more phone calls from you and other listeners right here on Morning Cannolis.
Direct from the Dairy States, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a 3-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app. Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Weather on this snowy day in Milwaukee could be brought to us by your pizza delivery business. Can you imagine how many families are snuggled in their homes enjoying hot, tasty pizza? Weather makes the phone ring for just $199 per week. Call us at 608-819-8255.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Daytime highs approaching 39 this afternoon under sunny skies. West winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Mainly clear tonight. Lows dip down to about 28. Slight chance for scattered showers tomorrow. High of 46. Mainly cloudy. Chance for scattered rain showers Tuesday and Wednesday. Upper 40s Tuesday. Low 50s by Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 25 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM. Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
I'll give it to you in just a minute. So we are back in our next segment here, broadcasting from the Wisconsin Grassroots Network in Mazomanie, the Wisconsin Heights High School, talking to many wonderful people here. We also have, right at our table, consistent with the name of our show, we've got cannolis here for members of the Wisconsin Grassroots Network, people participating here, talking to us about important issues in law, in government, in our existence on a daily basis here in the state of Wisconsin, throughout our nation. Come by if you have the opportunity throughout the day here, right after our show this morning. Again, Earl Ingram is going to be talking with you again at this very location. The cannolis will probably still be here, so join us here for that. Also, join us again remotely. Always 844-967-2789. Right before the break, we were talking with Ross from Middleton, right down the street here, about abortion and what is the impact of this patchwork that we now have in the United States, where reproductive services being prohibited by many states around the country and obviously not prohibited in others. And indeed, there was some news just yesterday having to do with this very issue. Wyoming, the state of Wyoming, became the first state in our nation to legislatively outlaw abortion bills, passing legislation there in that state signed by the governor. The Wyoming new law comes as a preliminary ruling also. We talked about this before. Coming out of Texas, a federal judge in Texas determining whether or not the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, its approval of mifepristone about 22 years ago, whether that should be revisited. That is the first pill, as you know well, in the two-drug medication abortion regimen. That ruling coming up very soon could upend how abortion is provided nationally, affecting states around the country where abortion is illegal, as well as those states with bans and restrictions. And so that going on in Texas, while just yesterday in Wyoming becomes the first state to ban generically the use of abortion pills. And again, all this adding some momentum to this growing push by conservative states and some anti-abortion groups to target medication abortion. The governor there of Wyoming, Mark Gordon, he's a Republican, signed the state's abortion bill ban on the same day that he said he would allow another more sweeping measure banning abortion to become law without his signature. He said this, it's kind of a curious thing to say. He said, I've acted without bias and after extensive prayer to allow these bills to become law.
and he wrote that to the Secretary of State just last night. Significantly, the bill, basically important because it takes effect on July 1, would make it illegal to prescribe, dispense, distribute, sell, or use any drug for the purpose of procuring or performing an abortion. Doctors or anyone else found guilty of violating the law would be charged with a misdemeanor, again, not a felony, but a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in prison and a $9,000 fine. This law coming out of Wyoming again just yesterday explicitly says that pregnant patients will be exempt from charges and penalties, perhaps in some way, Ross, responding to your question as well. Lots and lots of legislative history on this, significant because, of course, it's also going to be challenged in court in Wyoming, perhaps in the state court, maybe in the federal court as well. But again, a part of this continuing wrestling in America in the wake of the decision last June in Dobbs to find that there is no longer a federal constitutional right, a privacy right under our Constitution to get access to abortion, to reproductive rights. Very significant. We're going to continue to monitor this story, not just in Wyoming, but of course throughout the nation as this issue continues to percolate up and about. In addition to Wyoming, there are about 15 states that have enacted restrictions on access to medication abortion. We know that well. And there are also many, many other states out there that are going the opposite direction, right? Some states where Democratic legislatures have strong or sometimes maybe even unexpected majorities are moving to strengthen some of the abortion protections. In Minnesota, for example, just to our west, the first bill of the 2023 legislature just a couple of weeks ago made it harder for future legislatures and governors to water down protections designed to ensure that reproductive rights are guaranteed. That was signed by Governor Tim Walz, who was a Democrat. In Michigan, to our east, across the lake, the legislature appealed an abortion ban. Governor Gretchen Whitmer there expected to sign that. So we've got a diverse response to what happened back in June in the wake of the removal of the federal constitutional right to an abortion, to reproductive rights. We're getting this patchwork, which was very much predicted. And again, why is it important to know about that? Not only because of the questions that Ross and others have raised about where you are, access to health care, access to medical care, but also it also goes to civics issues as well and the kinds of things that you can do to the extent that you are concerned, and I would offer that all Americans should be concerned about the rolling back of privacy rights, however they are, beyond the importance of reproductive rights, but beyond that in other areas as well. Anytime there's a rolling back of these rights, Americans should be concerned about it. How do you respond to that? Well, it's voting once again, right? Legislatures are the ones who make the laws, as we've seen here in Wyoming, in Texas, and yes, also in Michigan and in Minnesota. Where do we get a Supreme Court justice as well? Well, we vote for them here in the state of Wisconsin, but we also get them appointed in the federal system by the president. And where does the president come from? Well, he gets voted in, right? How does that person in the Supreme Court get confirmed? By the United States Senate. And where do senators come from? They're voted on. So again, it all comes back to voting. Advocacy, yes, of the sort that's going on right here at the Wisconsin Grassroots Network in this moment, but also throughout our nation, throughout our state, to advocate for those things in the area of health care, privacy rights, many, many other areas that are important to us. Get out there, protest, write letters, do those kinds of things that all Americans should do. That's what we do in the wake of these kinds of news developments in the area of law and government and the rule of law in America. Right after this next break, we're going to take more callers and talk about more issues in those and other important issues affecting our nation and our state. Stay with us for all of that.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Another January 6th hearing? CBS's Scott McFarlane has the story.
A new House subcommittee will reinvestigate January 6th. The top Republican on the panel, Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, tells CBS News they're going to review the 2 million pages collected by the last Congress and some of those 41,000 hours of video and might call former Speaker Nancy Pelosi to testify.
Credit Suisse is pushing back on a takeover offer from UBS. This follows earlier reports that UBS Group had offered up to $1 billion to buy out the failed bank. China's leader heading to Moscow this week to meet with Russia's president. The goal is peace talks, but
this upcoming Russian-Chinese summit's likely to be as much about war as peace. Russia is depleting its stocks of weapons after more than a year of fighting in Ukraine and is desperately seeking Chinese arms and ammunition to keep the Russian war machine rolling.
That's Beth Noble in Moscow. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
This is Rocker, and I bet you didn't know I was a realtor. Come down to my open house tailgate party, 8 to 10 Saturday and Sunday mornings in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point. Enjoy donuts from Zippy Lube and coffee from Ford Craft and Coffee, and let's talk strategy before you head into battle. Find your glory, create a battle plan. Enjoy coffee and donuts every Saturday and Sunday morning in March at Weikert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find us on Facebook or weikert-lakepoint.com.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
The Devil's Advocates.
Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, dude.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
I'm sorry. And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your mind, Gina Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
We are back this morning in our continuing discussion of law, government, and justice in America, coming to you this morning from the Wisconsin Grassroots Network here in Mesomania, the Wisconsin Heights High School. Come on out if you have the opportunity to come out and visit with these wonderful people who are talking about these kinds of issues in seminars, programs, informal discussions. And yes, we've got cannolis at our table here of the studios of Civic Media for the taking. If you come by, talk to me, talk to Earl Ingram, who's going to be
joining the broadcast right after this one. Come out and be a part of this. We have got, however, some wonderful callers who are calling in, and we're going to take those callers right now. First, from Merrimack, Jack, you've been on the line for a little while here. What is your comment, your question, your thought, or your perspective to share with us this morning, Jack?
Boy, there's so much that...
there is a lot, isn't there?
Again. The first thing I want to say is that I'm still shocked at the irony and the hypocrisy of the U.S. Supreme Court when they basically said, gerrymandering is terrible, but the same groups that did the gerrymandering, they're going to have to ungerrymander. And, of course, we see how that worked out in Wisconsin. The same group that gerrymandered worse. But that wasn't really what I wanted to talk about.
Sure. And just as an aside, let's talk a little civics here again, Jack. You know, we've got two Supreme Court cases affecting gerrymandering pending right now before the High Court. Merrill versus Milligan coming out of Alabama. We've got the North Carolina case, Moore versus Harper. Lots of things that we're going to hear from the Supreme Court about in June of this year related to gerrymandering. So we'll stay tuned for all of that. But, Jack, you called for yet another reason, another purpose. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask someone that is knowledgeable in terms of legal questions. If you prohibit someone from buying, a medication in the mail, it gets sent from another state, and then you prosecute that person, isn't that a violation of the Interstate Commerce Act?
And Jack, again, this is a part of the law school that our country is now enrolled in, right? Because as we were chatting plainly about this attempt to outlaw abortion pills, one of the other issues, of course, is just that. What happens when you order them on the internet, other places, and you receive them through the mails? States attempting once again to stop that from happening legislatively. Very difficult, obviously, to monitor, control that and investigate that actively, but also raises the larger issue that you've raised, which is, okay, what about interstate commerce? Interestingly, there's a Supreme Court case pending having to do with pork in California that's going to address some of those issues as well. What does the Interstate Commerce Clause mean today, 2023? Could have an impact, depending upon how they define it, on exactly what you described. If I order something today from a provider in California, comes through the mail, and comes, for example, to Wyoming, where it's now illegal to possess and use those abortion pills, have I violated the law there? An awful lot of judges and an awful lot of litigants are going to be taking a look at that case, those kinds of cases, if prosecutions go forward, challenged in the courts on exactly the kind of constitutional issues that you're raising, Jack. Not a clear answer yet, and that's why they're not completely unplowed ground, so to speak. There's some precedent out there, but as the legislatures continue to try to reach out beyond their borders and affect the things that their own residents and other residents do, these are the questions that are going to percolate up into the courts and be a part of our national discussion. Great question, Jack. Appreciate it calling in and your comment. Joe from Madison. Glad, Joe, to have you on our show. Again, right down the street from you for once this morning, as opposed to west of you in Waukesha. Joe, good to hear from you, and always a pleasure to welcome you to our program.
I, too, have a question about this decision by the governor of Wyoming,
yes.
And as I understand it, he's basically saying that no access to abortion pills in his state, and right. He bases it. Now, this is interesting to me, Jim, and maybe you can help me work my way through this, because as I understand the case that is happening down in Texas, in Texas, the argument is being made that the FDA was negligent in some way, even though this pill has been in operation, been out on the market for decades without serious side effects, that nonetheless there was something wrong with the way it was done, and it would suggest that it needs to be redone, the research on it, and thus we're going to take it off the market for a while, or somehow that's going to be the tack they're going to take here. Is this governor of Wyoming opening up a can of worms by saying in his decision, after a time of prayer, Now, wouldn't that just sort of bring in whose prayer, which religion's prayer, and why would that make any difference in terms of how he goes about deciding this important public health issue? For example, would if the governor were a proponent or adherent to the religion of Scientology, which, as I understand, the IRS recognizes as a legitimate religion, and there are some in Scientology who do not believe that you should be taking any kind of medication for mental health illness. So if you have bipolar disease, you are not to spend any money. You should not have any pills to treat that. So what's the difference between that and what the governor has offered? Or, for example, there are evangelical groups who follow the Quiverful model, which is you have as many children as you can possibly have. So I consulted with my conscience, and with a time of prayer, I, as the governor, have decided to prohibit any birth control pills being sold in our state. Okay, what's the difference? And when you put in, you add the prayer in there, that seems to be opening up a big can of worms. So help me with this, Jim. What do you think?
Right.
I'll take my answer off here.
Absolutely. Joe, always, always such insightful thoughts. Again, I will probably offer an imperfect, incomplete answer, because this is exactly what prompts, again, not only challenges based upon, you know, we can often ask in courts, what was the reason for the legislature to put this in place in the first place? What was the governor's motivation to do this? And I will say at the outset, a non-legal response. Of course, he's saying that. He said, I've acted without bias and after extensive prayer. That's plainly to appeal to his own base, to suggest that, okay, I'm doing this. I am responding to some sense of faith and spirituality out there. I agree with you. And it goes to this fundamental notion that, again, First Amendment, the Establishment Clause says what? Says that there is a separation of church and state. Yes, there's also the Free Exercise Clause. You can exercise your religion without interference by the government, but the government itself does not advocate right for a particular religion. You've identified Scientology, maybe other religions out there. It at a minimum, Joe, it certainly clouds the issue, right? Why not simply say, you know what, I've looked at this and I've made the determination that this is appropriate for the people of the state of Wyoming. I've looked at some of the legislative history, and I'm going to, the infusion of religion into this kind of issue not only clouds things, but arguably also gives those folks who are in fact going to challenge this in court some additional grist to come in and say, you know what, if this is indeed is a product of the governor's own spirituality, that is a violation of separation of church and state. We know that the court in the past term, not so much this term, past term has spent a lot of time talking about where free exercise goes, where the limits of government interference are, the significance of the separation of church and state, all of those issues are incredibly important. And the can of worms, I think so, Joe. I think you raised an important issue. Of course, more broadly, all of this, a part of a larger patchwork. You mentioned as well Texas. That, of course, is a federal judge there who might very soon, maybe later this month, sometime soon, find that this pill that was in fact authorized by the FDA, I think 22 years ago, was the product of an inappropriate, incomplete analysis. So let's pull all that back and go back again and do that. Again, talk about motivations to do things in the wake, again, of 20 years. Mifepristone, the name of that first pill in the two-drug medication abortion regimen. We will see on all of these things how far this goes, where it takes us as we go forward in addressing, again, the larger issues. What related to the role of government? And again, the basic concern, to repeat what I commented about before, the rolling back of privacy rights and the concerns about how that impacts not only reproductive rights and the rights we all have, but all these other things that relate to things like how we make decisions about who our families are, right to medical care, including reproductive services, but also end-of-life decisions, decisions plainly about same-sex marriage, about interracial marriage, all those kinds of things implicated by Dobbs, opening up, again, to use your good expression, Joe, a can of worms that legislatures and courts, federal and state, are going to be addressing, perhaps imperfectly, in the times just ahead. So as we go forward here, let's talk about a couple of more matters that are also on the national agenda here. Again, a civics matter. This one having to do with pardons. And again, relevant to our first discussion in our first hour here on Morning Cannolis about the present status of our former president, perhaps based upon some rumor mongering out there, likely to be indicted maybe by the Manhattan DA very soon, maybe by the DA in Fulton County, maybe ultimately by the Department of Justice for various state and federal offenses out there. One of the things that's always loomed large out there is whether or not a sitting president and a former president now is entitled to a pardon. And of course, when Donald Trump was still in office, this issue loomed large. We know that the Constitution provides that indeed a sitting president can grant pardons to other people. Question whether or not one can pardon oneself. My own view, and I think the view of an awful lot of people out there, is you cannot do it. It's not a reflexive authority that's under the Constitution. But pardons have come up again. And the question of whether or not a conviction, for example, in the federal system can in fact be pardoned, it can be, but whether a subsequent state prosecution can follow a federal pardon, and we know that that can in fact happen. We've seen that on a regular basis. This past week, a situation where a state pardon does not prohibit a subsequent federal prosecution, kind of just the reverse of what we've normally talked about. So what happens here is there's a defendant who in Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, who was convicted of reckless homicide, a horrific death back in 2017. He's sentenced to 19 years in prison. The governor, a fellow named Matt Bevin, says that he is going to pardon and release this defendant, erase the conviction, finding that the evidence against this particular defendant was sketchy, in his words. And the governor, of course, has the authority to do that under the state constitution. Again, finding that under his expression, his invocation of responsibility here and also prerogative, he imposes this state pardon. And what happens is that federal prosecutors, feeling strongly that that's not an appropriate execution of justice, rule of law, justice, government, all those things we talk about, they brought charges against the same defendant after he was released from prison when the governor, the state governor, imposed that state pardon. And so what happens is, of course, the defendant comes back and says, wait a minute, I was pardoned by the state. You can't charge me federally for this same kind of conduct. And federal prosecutors argue this in the lower district court and ultimately to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. They said that the defendant here was prosecuted the second time under something, and here's again your civics lesson for this morning and going into our final segment here, the dual sovereignty doctrine. The dual sovereignty doctrine, what is that all about? Well, it says that state and federal officials can in fact prosecute the same defendant for the same actions without infringing on double jeopardy protections. In other words, there's no prohibition on doing, in this case, a subsequent federal prosecution in the wake of a state prosecution, even following a state pardon by the governor. And so what happens is that this goes up to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, again, an appeals court right below the Supreme Court. They take a look at all this and take a look at the question of whether or not this defendant, by virtue of his state pardon, is immune from, is protected from a federal criminal prosecution, basically the same kind of thing. And the defendant, of course, argues that the prosecution is vindictive and inappropriate. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals embraces the dual sovereignty doctrine and says, indeed, that state and local officials can do exactly this and can prosecute the defendant a second time for the same actions without infringing on double jeopardy. Another civics lesson this morning on Morning Cannolis. Come back for our final segment. We're going to talk about some international stories in that final segment right here on our morning broadcast.
It's the Mad City Brido Expo, Sunday, March 26th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. Imagine planning your wedding in just one day. Pre-register for tickets at madcitybridoexpo.com and receive a $200 gift card. Tickets are also available at the door for $10. Read all the details at madcitybridoexpo.com and like them on Facebook. It's the Mad City Brido Expo, Sunday, March 26th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. Your ring is just the beginning.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Weather on this snowy, snowy day could be brought to us by your business. Can you imagine how many ice augers and fishing shanties are being bought as we speak? Weather sponsorships make the phone ring. Call us at 608-819-8255.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Ample sunshine expected this afternoon with a high of 39. Winds out of the west, 10 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly clear skies tonight, low is around 28. Mainly cloudy skies expected tomorrow, slight chance for scattered rain showers, high of 46. Upper 40s Tuesday, low 50s by Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 25 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back for our final segment this morning, coming to you from the Wisconsin Grassroots Network here in Mazomanie, the Wisconsin Heights High School. Delighted to have you still with me in our last moments of this second hour on our broadcast, talking as always about stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Come out to the Wisconsin Grassroots Network here in Mazomanie if you have the opportunity. If not, stay with us, because right after this program, my colleague and friend Earl Ingram is going to be on the airwaves here, broadcasting from this very location. The cannolis will still be here. They're being consumed bit by the people who are here, wonderful people talking about important issues of the support that we're also describing here on our morning broadcast. I promised right before the break that we'd finish up our time together this morning, live from Wisconsin, live from Mazomanie, talking about some international stories that are also significant because it got reverberations back to the United States of America, and certainly back right here in the state of Wisconsin. You will recognize those things as soon as we chat about these important issues. One of them, breaking once again just yesterday, has to do with Ukraine, to be sure, but also more significantly, the focus of this story, a fellow named Putin, who of course is the Russian president. Just yesterday, something called the International Criminal Court, issued an arrest warrant for Putin, alleging that he bears criminal responsibility. When I first heard this story, I was thinking, gosh, is this related to war crimes in Ukraine? We know that there are agencies, there are private groups, there are governmental groups, there are international groups looking whether or not, and probably almost certainly did in fact, in Ukraine, experience war crimes at the hands of Russian military and other leaders there. This story is actually not about that, but very much tangentially related to Ukraine because of the nature of the allegations. So again, not yet charging Putin and others with war crimes related to the war, except insofar as it relates to children, charging with criminal responsibility for the abduction and the deportation of Ukrainian children. Human rights groups, of course, praising this move. They've investigated this a lot. And that's the case, even though, as we all suspect, the likelihood of an imminent arrest of Putin,
is remote, if not completely non-existent. But again, the International Criminal Court, this international body, on Friday issues this arrest warrant for what they describe as war crimes. Ukrainian officials, human rights groups, again, very much focused on this important step in holding Moscow account for abuses, maybe not related to the war itself on the war front, on the battlefield, but nonetheless going to the very heart of the Ukrainian people and the legitimacy of their children's status there. Volodymyr Zelensky, of course, the president of Ukraine, said this warrant represents the beginning of historical responsibility. He is speaking, again, not only about war crimes on the battlefield, but about this particular kind of thing. That is where there's this allegation that over time, the arrest warrant as to Putin related to the abduction, the taking of children out of Ukraine and bringing them to Russia to reprogram, to place them with other families, an horrific allegation coming out of the International Criminal Court. The arrest warrant, again, Vladimir Putin, but also for a second person, a woman named Maria Lvova-Belova. That is Putin's commissioner for children's rights and a loyal party servant. The irony, of course, dripping there. Lvova-Belova has led Russia's effort to deport thousands of Ukrainian children, including their removal by Russian forces, who, of course, are in Ukraine for the purposes of the war. The United States, interestingly, two aspects of this. First, for a variety of jurisdictional reasons, historical reasons, the United States does not recognize, is not a party to, does not participate in the events of the International Criminal Court. But nonetheless, obviously, significant news and information coming out of that court related to this particular story. The United States government, your government, previously did impose sanctions on Lvova-Belova, again, this party servant and the commissioner for children's rights in Russia. We did that in September. And what was that all about? Well, we charged and imposed sanctions on her for coordinating what our Treasury Department, our Federal Treasury Department, said were policies that facilitated forced adoptions into Russian families of these children taken from the Ukrainian nation. Also alleging that these legislative changes that accompanied this were aimed at expediting Russian citizenship for these children. Again, arguably one of the worst possible things that could come out of all of these circumstances related to an already disastrous circumstance in Ukraine. Now the children affected, taken by President Putin there, taken by this Commissioner Lvova-Belova. The United States plainly already has her in its attention, imposing sanctions on her individually, but now also she is the subject of this arrest warrant issued by this international tribunal for engaging in this kind of conduct. Again, looking forward to more of that as well. Volodymyr Zelensky once again finding that this is the beginning of historical responsibility. Again, probably down the road, other groups will address other issues related to the war crimes committed on the battlefield, this one having to do with Ukrainian children, their abduction, their deportation, their movement, their removal from their parents, and their movement into Russia, plainly for indoctrination there in that country. Horrific story. Not the rule of law, but a usurpation, a standing of the rule of law, of justice on its head. And then we go right to the south of us, here in the state of the country of Mexico. Mexico having passed a controversial electoral reform package of legislation just in recent weeks, an overhaul of the National Electoral Institute being driven by the current president, López Obrador, who has accused this group previously of being partisan. The move is going to slash the NEI, the National Electoral Institute's budget, reduce its staffing, and lead to the closure of many of its offices. Of course, opponents of this measure have called for protests and regard this as an effort by the current president to undermine elections in that country, perhaps, again, reverberating many shades of what our former president, President Trump, has attempted to do in undermining the electoral process here in our nation as well. The legislation was passed by the Mexican legislature. but nonetheless pursued there in Mexico. Stay with us as we go into the 11 o'clock hour. Earl Ingram is going to be joining you and all others for the 11 o'clock show right here on these broadcast stations of Civic Media. Next week, I'm back in Waukesha again with Calvin, March 25th. Join me for our 40th broadcast in June. Have a good week, everybody. Thank you once again for joining me in our discussion of the rule of law, justice, and government in Wisconsin and in our United States of America.
It's the Mad City Brido Expo, Sunday, March 26th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. Imagine planning your wedding in just one day. Pre-register for tickets at madcitybridoexpo.com and receive a $200 gift card. Tickets are also available at the door for $10. Read all the details at madcitybridoexpo.com and like them on Facebook. It's the Mad City Brido Expo, Sunday, March 26th at the Monona Terrace in Madison. Your ring is just the beginning.
It's the only forum both Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates will take part in, and you can hear it Tuesday, March 21st at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell will anchor our special coverage as Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly debate some of the biggest issues facing the court, from redistricting to abortion access.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court candidates debate Tuesday, March 21st, here on your local.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always